The owner just texted me yesterday and she said, hey, Rich, you know, we're retiring and I think we're finally ready to sell our Lake Tahoe property. They have another boutique hotel in South Lake Tahoe. And she said, we'd love to give you first crack at the deal and we can sell or finance it. So now I'm hopping on a call this afternoon with a seller that I've built a relationship with over the last year and a half. And she's going to sell or finance the deal. And I'm going to have first crack at this deal because I built that relationship.
Welcome to the Rich Summers Report, where we talk real estate, business, and wealth building, all while keeping it real. No fluff, no BS. I hope that you enjoy the show.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Report Saturday edition. And today I'm actually rolling solo. Last weekend, we just got back from Miami. We were out there, a few folks on the team, Parker and Presley. We got to go out there and join some folks out at a mastermind event. It was a one-day mastermind. We had Jordan Belford, Wolf of Wall Street, Wes Watson was out there. And a bunch of other folks out there in the space. Ryan Garland, shout out to Ryan who hosted the event. But it was cool. It was fun. Got to meet some really, really cool people. You know, listeners were out there. Thank you for coming out. It was really fun to just kind of meet everyone and network and really hang out. So that was inspiring. And randomly that Saturday night, we were out there out at a spot, little rooftop. And I got connected through my good friend, Jeff Bomarito. Shout out to Jeff. But he connected me to Ryan Garcia, one of the top two or three boxers in the world right now. He's like, hey, my buddy Ryan's going to come over and say what's up. And sure enough, 10 minutes later, Ryan Garcia rolls through with like three security guards and his girlfriend. We ended up hanging out, hitting it off. And Ryan and his girlfriend ended up coming back to our spot that night. And we became friends. So shout out to Ryan Garcia. That was super cool and inspiring to meet him. And this weekend, super excited with the team and I. We're all going out to Nashville for the STR Wealth Conference. Out in Nashville, Tennessee. This is going to be our third time going in a row. And excited to be speaking. I'm doing a four-hour boutique hotel panel with my guy, Mike Shogren. Damon John from Shark Tank is going to be out there speaking. Pace Morby is going to be out there. And some other big players. So super excited for it. It's a big conference, 2,500 people. And it's not too late to grab a spot. If any of the listeners, you guys want to go out there, I highly suggest it. If you're into short-term rentals, if you're into boutique hotels, it's great event. Get around like-minded individuals and some great networking out there in downtown Nashville, which is a cool, fun city as well. But with that, you know, we're going to be speaking on all sorts of stuff over the four-hour panel. But really, it's going to be three things. And these are the three things that are most important in order to build a real estate portfolio or build a portfolio of boutique hotels. Is you really need three things. You need deal development, you need capital development, and you need operations. So what is deal development? Deal development is really access to good deals. If you just want to dumb it down to that, it's access to good deals. And then you got capital development, which is money, right? So what does your capital stack look like? So you're going to need lending. You know, often with these real estate deals, your lender is your biggest partner. They're putting in anywhere from 60 to 75% in on these deals. And then you got investor equity, right? What's your equity? So you need the deals, you need the money, and you need the operations. Who's going to operate these properties? And if you got all three of those, you know, there's no cap to how big of a real estate portfolio you can build. And there's no cap to your ability to buy, which is pretty cool. So anyways, that said, on this segment, I'm going to be going over everything on deal development. I'm going to be outlining exactly what you need to do to find a really good boutique hotel to buy in 2024. And stay tuned because in the coming weeks, I'm going to be dropping other episodes on capital development and also operations. But this one's going to be focused strictly on the deal development side. So first things first, you really want to get clear on exactly what market you want to be in. What is your search criteria? What kind of an asset do you want to buy? Because when you guys go out there and you start meeting these brokers, the more clear and specific that you can be with your search criteria, the better chance you're going to be giving that broker and, you know, an opportunity to find you the right deal that should fit your buy box. Okay. So first thing when nailing down your search criteria is you really want to think market selection. What markets do you want to go into? Do you want to go into primary markets, major metros like San Diego or a San Francisco? Or do you want to go into secondary markets, more rural markets? So figure out, you know, which one you want to go into. There's pros and cons of both. I think from a risk perspective, going into a major market is a little bit less risk because the lenders know, hey, you know, if you can't operate as a boutique hotel one day, you can probably convert this property into multifamily. There's probably other uses for the property. So you will get better lending terms in a major market. However, in major markets, you have the risk of oversupply and oversaturation. You know, look at Phoenix right now, right? Phoenix has a ton of new construction and development areas like Dallas and Houston. And so you're seeing an oversupply in a lot of markets, not just in hotels, but also also multifamily. Now, on the flip side, you go into a rural market, let's say the Black Sands Inn. That was the first hotel that I bought up in Shelter Cove. And that's a very rural market. The cool thing is we don't have the risk of oversupply and oversaturation. There's not a lot of competition out there. There's not a lot of branded hotels. There's actually no branded hotels up there. And when I say branded, I mean, you know, there's no Marriott's, there's no Hilton's, there's no Ramada Inns up there. There's just a few boutiques. And there's no risk of the oversaturation, which is great because we went in there, we did a nice renovation, and we have the nicest boutique hotel in that market. And so we can command top ADRs, we can command top occupancy, and we don't have to worry about more competition entering that market, or at least it's highly unlikely. So next up, once you figure out exactly what markets you want to go into, you want to look at the market fundamentals within those markets. So if it's a major market, I always like to look at a couple things. One, what is the population growth look like over the last 10 years? What is the employment growth look like? Look at those trends, because obviously you want to go into a growing market. You don't want to go into an area like Detroit or Cleveland where you have declining population growth because you're not going to have any wind at your back. And you want some organic appreciation as well. And you want to give yourself the best opportunity to achieve that organic appreciation. And then once you do that, you need to figure out, okay, well, what locations within those markets that you select do you want to go into? Quality of location, do you want to be waterfront, or are you okay being off the water? Or maybe you're looking at areas near national parks, but the reason I say this and the reason this is important is because, you know, location is everything. So if you're going to go in and buy a boutique hotel, we don't want to be in an area where, you know, on the block, you got pawn shops and liquor stores surrounding the hotel. If I do a nice renovation on that type of property, no matter how nice I make the property, I know the guests are not going to want to pay a high ADR to stay at a property, no matter how nice it is, because it's in a bad location. So for us, we like well-located assets within the markets. So, you know, if it's not a beachfront or waterfront market, well, maybe you find the best streets or best parts of that market to be in. So for example, if there's a downtown area that's walkable and that's where all the restaurants and nightlife and coffee shops are, well, we know having a boutique hotel like right off of that main drag is probably going to command higher ADRs and that sort of thing. So think about where you want to be location-wise within those markets. And then next is Airbnb regulations, right? We want to buy hotels where the Airbnb regulations are tightening, or there's pending short-term rental regulations coming down the pipeline. We saw New York City just ban short-term rentals. We saw San Diego regulate short-term rentals. They slashed the supply here from about 16,000 short-term rentals to about 5,500 last year. And so we know, hey, that's going to bring more demand back to the boutique hotels. And so, you know, traditionally real estate investing, long-term rentals, apartment investing, you hear a lot of investors say, oh, I want to go into landlord-friendly states such as Texas and Florida. I don't want to worry about the squatters and it could take 9 months to get a tenant out. Well, with boutique hotels, we almost think opposite because we want to go into areas that have tightening short-term rental regulations, a lot of bureaucracy, and those tend to be blue states, more liberal areas that have the bureaucracy and the red tape. And so we're kind of looking a little bit the other direction versus the standard stuff. So we like areas in California, coastal stuff. They have tightening short-term rental regulations because we know it bodes well for the boutique hotels and it creates a little bit less competition. Okay, so once you have that kind of dialed in, your market analysis, what markets you want to go into, what locations within those markets, the next thing you want to do is figure out the components of the deal. So value add strategies, right? So do you want to buy a property that has a lot of value add components? I know for us, we do. We want to, you know, buy at a discount. We want to be able to add tremendous value because that's where we're increasing and really juicing the returns for our investors. So ways to add value. Is it through renovations? Is it through marketing? Is it through good operations? So figure out what that's going to look like. And then also, do you want to find deals that have seller financing opportunities? I know for us, it's not a must because we got some good lending options. However, if we can find a deal that has good seller financing available, that's always a bonus. It's quicker to close, shortens up timelines. You can negotiate your own terms, your own financing, your own pricing, which is, you know, it's unique, but it also makes the deal that much more appealing for you and also for your investors. And then the last thing you really want to get clear on is the unit size. Okay, so how many units do you want to buy? You know, for us, minimum 10 units. Anything smaller than that, it's a little bit challenging to, you know, get the economies to scale from an operations standpoint. So we like at least 10 plus, ideally a little bit more than that. And then we'll look up to about 50 units. The reason we don't look more than that is because now it takes away our competitive advantage, which is operating these deals remotely, free of the on-site management. And then next is you got to get clear on your ability to buy. Okay, so from a minimum and maximum perspective, how much capital do you think you can raise, right? Is this going to be your first capital raise? If that is the case, well, you know, get clear on, you know, who all your contacts are in your network. Write down, you know, all the names that you have in your phone book. Write down all the people that you are close with. Go on Instagram, see all the people you're following. Put them in an Excel sheet. Start reaching out to them and have conversations with them and see, let them know what you're up to. And, you know, when you reach out to these folks, never tell them on the first reach out, you know, what you're looking for. Just reach out organically and say, hey, you know, Mike, long time no talk. How's everything going? And strike up genuine conversations with these folks. And then when they ask you what you're up to, then tell them, hey, I'm buying boutique hotels or I'm buying apartment buildings right now. And I have investment opportunities for partners and you can get cash flow and tax benefits and that sort of thing. And see if they have any interest. And you'd be surprised how many folks don't even realize that this is an opportunity that they could participate in. Start there and figure out exactly how much money you think you could raise. And if you can't raise a ton, maybe you partner with someone that can raise money and you go and find the deal. But anyways, get clear on your ability to buy from a minimum and maximum perspective. For us, we're looking 2 to 10 million. The reason we don't look more than 10 million is because now we're talking institutional, more institutional type of a seller, and more institutional type of a buyer as well from like the competition standpoint. So we're looking 2 to 10 million. And then lastly is you want to get clear on your lending. Who's going to be your lender if there's no seller financing opportunities? So, you know, reach out, meet some lenders, get clear on what your lending looks like. So that way, when you start meeting these brokers, you can relay to them exactly what you're looking for. You can tell them that your lending's lined up and you can just have a really defined search criteria. It makes them trust you, but it also, they will take you a lot more seriously if you can do these things. So before you find a deal, you really want to get clear on these markets and which brokers are the top brokers in these markets. And you want to start building these relationships with these brokers. So we use CoStar. And so you go on CoStar and you can pull up different markets in the hospitality space. Let's just say 50 units and under. And then you can pull up all the brokers and it will show you which brokers had the most transactions of hotels in the market over the last 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And we'll start with those brokers because we know they have the most deal flow and the most experience and know the most owners, and just start picking up the phone and calling them. Hey, my name's Rich. I'm a boutique hotel investor out of San Diego. We're buying boutique hotels between $2 and $10 million. I was wondering if you had a few minutes to go over some of our search criteria and get to know each other. Boom. There you go. Now you start chatting with the broker, establish that relationship, build the rapport, tell them exactly what you're looking for. Give them the confidence that you have the ability to close should you find the right deal. And then from there, start building out your list. Go into all these markets, start meeting all the brokers and put them into your list, put them into a CRM and start pinging them every couple weeks. Hey, happy Monday, Mike, just checking in, wondering if you have any deals that are in your pipeline that might fit our criteria. As a reminder, this is what we're looking for. What are the chances you have something that you're working on that might fit? And you'd be surprised. A lot of this stuff is right place, right time. And that's really how you find the deals. And then direct to seller is also cool too. There was a owner actually next to the the Black Sands Inn. It's the Ocean Front Inn up in Shelter Cove. And I've been working on this relationship for since we bought that property a year and a half ago. And the owner just texted me yesterday and she said, "Hey, Rich, you know, we're retiring and I think we're finally ready to sell our Lake Tahoe property." They have another boutique hotel in South Lake Tahoe. And she said, "We'd love to give you first crack at the deal and we can sell or finance it." So now I'm hopping on a call this afternoon with a seller that I've built a relationship with over the last year and a half. And she's going to sell or finance the deal. And I'm going to have first crack at this deal because I built that relationship. Hey guys, real quick, the only way this show grows, the only way we continue to bring on bigger and better guests is if you guys rate, review, and share the show. So if you could take 2 seconds or the click of the thumb to review on Apple or Spotify, it will mean the world to me. But more importantly, we'll be able to reach more entrepreneurs and more real estate investors and help them build wealth through this podcast. Now back to the show. And so direct to seller is good as well. You know, on CoStar, you can find the contact information for these sellers, whether it be emails, phone numbers, or even if it's an entity that owns it, you can do some due diligence and sometimes figure out who owns these properties. But I would say 98% of the commercial real estate deals are sold or transacted by a broker. And you really want to, you know, they're the gatekeepers. They're spending, you know, decades sometimes, but years often building relationships with these sellers. And so when these sellers are finally ready to sell, they're going to go through the broker. Okay. So next up, you get the deal, you get to establish a deal flow, and you're gonna have a lot of deals to sort through. So for us, we want to find the quickest way to say yes or no to a deal. The maybes are going to take a lot of time. So try to get to a quick yes or no. The first thing I try to do is I'll pull up the deal and I'll look at I'll do a Google Street View. I want to see, what does this property look like? What does this hotel look like? And from an exterior standpoint, and I also like to go around the block. Is this thing surrounded by liquor stores and pawn stores, or is it like in a really good neighborhood? Does it have a Starbucks and a Whole Foods and like nicer amenities? Is it on the beach? That sort of thing. Once I establish the, you know, the neighborhood, I like to look at the front of the property, see what it looks like. And yes, these hotels are going to need some renovations. Otherwise, we wouldn't be picking them up at a discount. But you got to look at the exterior of the property and realize, is this property, after I do a nice renovation, improve the aesthetics of the exterior, is it going to be a trophy looking asset? Is it going to look like a nice boutique hotel? Or, because some of these properties, let's be honest, no matter what you do to the exterior, they're not going to look sexy. They're not going to look good. And this is important because, one, you know, this is important for your guests. If the property doesn't look fun, it doesn't look safe, it doesn't look aesthetically pleasing from the curb or when you pull up to it, no matter how nice you make the interior, the guests aren't probably going to want to pay top dollar. Also, when you go to exit and sell these properties down the road, you got to understand, what's the next buyer going to look like, right? How is this person going to view the property when you're looking to sell the property? So I have a couple examples. So there's a property that we were looking at a long time ago. We passed on it, but it's called the Homestead Inn in San Luis Obispo. It was on the market for 365 days. It finally traded 18 units for $3.2 million. I thought that was very overpriced. I'm shocked that the seller got it, but it's probably a testament to, you know, San Luis Obispo and being a good, strong market. But, you know, this property sat on the market for a year. Why? Because, you know, it's a rundown old motel, but like no matter how much you renovate the exterior, it's never going to look sexy. It's never going to be aesthetically pleasing or appealing. So, you know, we passed on it, but, you know, it's a testament to other buyers are going to pass on it too. So you never want to buy a deal that no one wants to buy. On the flip side, you have the Surf House in Encinitas, 8-unit boutique hotel, smaller. A group bought it back in like 2015, I want to say, and it was run down. It was tired. It had deferred maintenance. And but they did a great job with the renovation. And this property, you can visualize it. You can see it. And it looks really good. And that thing is cranking. It's one of the most popular hotels in North County, San Diego now. 8 units, really, really good job with it. I think they like tripled or maybe even quadrupled the value of that property. And so I say all this in that you want to first make sure that it's a property exterior wise and location wise that is something that would be appealing. Once you establish that, then you can move on to the next component. The next thing I like to do is I like to look at the sales comps. So we go on CoStar and figure out the pricing guidance of the deal, the subject property, and then go and look at all the sales comps and determine, where does this pricing guidance of the subject property fall in line with the sales comps? If it's high, okay, I know that this is probably not a deal that I need to move fast on. Doesn't mean I won't put it, submit an offer on it at a number that makes sense, but it's also not a deal that I'm going to prioritize over other deals that hit my desk that might have a good pricing guidance. Now, on the flip side, if the pricing guidance is very, very competitive, let's say it's discounted and it's at the bottom of the comp set. When I say comp set, I mean the local sales of surrounding properties in that area, local hotels. You can find all that stuff on CoStar. And it'll tell you exactly what all these other hotels in the area traded for and when on a price per door basis. And you pick your best comps and figure out what that set looks like. If it's a rural market, well, and there's not a lot of boutique hotels, expand out. Find some other rural similar markets that are 20 miles away, 30 miles away that have similar hotels that have traded in the last few years and figure out what those properties traded for, because that's exactly what the appraiser is going to do. Now, once you figure out the comp set, you want to get on the phone with the broker and really figure out what's the story of the deal. I always ask the broker, tell me the story of the deal. Why is the seller selling? And you want to figure out what are the value add components of this deal? Does it require a light renovation, heavy renovation? Why is it underperforming? Is it because of technology? Is it because of poor management? Is it because of poor marketing? Is it because of any other deficiencies? And then I always ask the brokers, what deferred maintenance or expensive CapEx items are going to be, you know, replacing the, not replacing, but nearing the end of their life cycle, or things need to be replaced on the property that I should be aware of. And that's the opportunity for the broker or the seller to let you know, hey, the roofs need to be replaced, or the HVAC units need to be replaced. And so you got to price that into your offer when you guys come up with an offer, should you move forward on the property. And then you want to continue to qualify the deal. Okay, what is the best lending? What's the ideal lending for this particular deal? So, you know, obviously, if you guys go buy a stabilized property that doesn't have any value add components from like a renovation standpoint, at least, well, we know that property, you probably want to get permanent financing, right? Or seller financing. And, you know, if you do those things, you're going to get the best pricing, the best terms with the permanent financing, but you're not going to get renovation money. So, you know, flip side, if you got a deal that requires a heavy renovation, well, in that case, we know we want to probably get some bridge financing because they're going to finance a portion of our renovation capital. You're going to get better leverage, which is going to juice the returns. Or is the seller willing to finance it? If that's the case, maybe that's the play. Or maybe you do a combination of both. And then next up, you want to really underwrite the deal. So what are the assumptions? So get the ADR assumptions, average daily rate. And again, you can find all this stuff on CoStar. You can use AirDNA, but we like to use both more heavily on CoStar. And then occupancy assumptions, you can find those on CoStar as well. And then you want to call and visit the local properties. I would say call first and talk to the front desk, see what kind of information you can get, go to their website, see what they're charging, and try to use those assumptions to plug into your underwriting tool. And once you get these deals kind of under contract, you're more in the due diligence phase and you're like, okay, we're really going to buy this thing. That's when you want to go to the property in the market and walk all these other comps and literally go through them, tour the hotel rooms, the surrounding properties, see what their finishes look like versus what you're going to do to your subject property, and really dial on your underwriting that way. And then you want to get clear, okay, what's the business plan going to be? Okay, are we going to renovate the interior and exterior? Is it going to be a light reno, heavy reno? Who's your contractor? Who's your designer going to be? The brander? Are you going to hire a brander? And then what's the ideal hold period, right? And your underwriting tool will show you all this stuff and they'll tell you the answer, but it's going to be 2 years. Will it be 5 years? Will it be 7 years? Or maybe it's 10 years plus, right? And a lot of that's going to come down to how the deal underwrites, but also what kind of appetite your investors have. Do they want their money back quickly, or do they want kind of more of a long-term thing? I can say, generally speaking, it's going to be easier to raise money for a deal that's kind of a shorter time horizon. And then management, who's going to manage the property? Are you going to self-manage it? Are you going to hire a third-party manager? Are you going to manage it remotely, or does it require on-site management? So these are the things you need to answer or ask yourself when you're underwriting. And then what's the refi scenario look like? You know, are you going to, is the seller financing it? Are you going to keep the seller note there when you add all this value? Are you in a bridge note going in and it's expensive debt, typically 18 to 24 month term? You'll have to refi within 24 months. So these are things you need to ask yourself. And then what's your refi cap rate assumption? We like to, underwrite to a more conservative cap rate. because it just takes a lot of risk off of the table. And so for us, we like to look at the going in cap rate for hospitality for that market. And then we like to increase that cap rate by at least 150 to 200 basis points. So for example, if the going in cap rate in that market is like 8% for hotels, we want to underwrite for 9.5% to 10% refi cap rate when we go to refi these deals. It just increases the level of conservativeness. It just allows you to kind of gives you a little bit more of a buffer or cushion for error should you miss on some of your assumptions. And that's kind of what we do in our boutique hotel mastermind. Next up, you want to set up your GP LLC structure and kind of figure out exactly what that's going to look like. You know, get clear on your splits. So will there be multiple GPs? So will you be partnering? Or are you going to be the sole GP? If you're going to be partnering, figure out what those ownership percentages are going to be. And then what is the GP LP split going to be? Are you going to have hurdles? Are you going to have waterfalls? Who is your SEC attorney, right? Are you going to do a single asset syndication? Or are you going to set up a fund? We've done both. There's pros and cons of both. I would say if this is your first syndication, probably do a single asset. But if you think, hey, we're going to pick up three or four of these hotels this year, well, maybe do a fund. That makes a lot more sense. So get clear on all that. Talk to your SEC attorney early on in this buying process and that sort of thing. Back to the underwriting of the deal. So we have a really cool hotel analyzer that we've spent hours and hours with our developer, this custom building and that sort of thing, specific to boutique hotels. But this thing's in depth, you know, and so the main components you want to look at is the renovation period. How long is it going to take for you to renovate? How many units are you going to renovate per month? What's your operational expenses going to look like while you're, you know, in renovation phase and you're stabilizing the property? And then, you know, what is your ADR occupancy assumptions post-stabilization? What's your refi cap rate? What's your exit cap rate? How much equity are you going to need to raise? And what's the return profile going to look like? We know for us, you know, our investors are looking for a 15 to 20% IRR or, you know, average annualized return. And we want at least a 10% cash on cash return, right? Post stabilization. So that's kind of what we're looking for. And that's kind of what we underwrite these deals based on investor returns. You know, next you want to look at the overall return profile based on the hold period. Okay, what are the GPs going to make over the hold period? What are the investors going to make over the hold period? What is their equity multiple and that sort of thing? If it all checks the box and if it's a deal that you want to move forward on, you know, then you submit an LOI. That's the next step, right? So you submit an LOI on these deals. A letter of intent. And this is like an offer, like in the residential space, you just submit an offer through an agent. But in the commercial real estate space, you just submit a letter of intent to either the seller or to the broker. And it's a non-legally binding, you know, just usually 1 to 2 pages. Ours is 2 pages, but basically just says, hey, like this is a little bit about us, what we do. This is the price that we're willing to pay for the property. Here are the terms. Are we looking for seller financing? This is what our due diligence is going to look like. Typically, it's going to be 30 days. We'll close another 30 days after that. And you just kind of outline the high level, like numbers and terms of your offer. And then you sign it and date it, send it off to the broker or the seller. And if the seller accepts, then they sign it. And then you typically have 5 business days to put together a formal PSA, which you should always have a legal attorney draft up for you to keep you out of any trouble. And then from there, you want to figure out what your ideal exit looks like. So who is the ideal buyer for your property? What kind of property is this ideal buyer looking for? And how do you position this property to be most appealing to this buyer? And then when is the ideal time to exit? So, you know, a lot of people get into real estate investing, they're thinking about the property they're buying, but they're not thinking about the exit. And so we got to think about what is the next buyer going to look like and how do we make this property most attractive for that next buyer? These are all the things that we teach in our boutique hotel mastermind. But it's very important to ask yourself that in any real estate deal, for example, if you're investing in apartments, you don't always want to renovate all the units, right? So, you know, you got to figure out your next buyer. A lot of these apartment buyers, they want to pick up a value add property. And so maybe you renovate 25 to 50% of those units. You show them the increase in rents that you're getting on those units, and then you position it and market your property as a sale, as a proven value add. It's like, hey, look at, I got these rent lists on these units. All you have to do is finish off these unit renovations and you can capture those rent increases and the appreciation on your end. I left you some meat on the bone and that sort of thing. So it really depends on who that buyer is. Or maybe your buyer is looking for a fully stabilized property. But generally speaking, hotels, you want to do the full renovation. I think that'd be weird to have a hotel that's partially renovated and then the other rooms are not. You'd probably be attracting different demographics of guests as well. So from there, you also want to figure out what is your org chart kind of look like? Capital raising, all that sort of thing. I'm gonna do that on another episode. I'm gonna get into capital stack and capital development and that sort of thing. We'll get deep into raising capital and what that looks like. But high level, you know, with your SEC attorney, you also want to figure out pretty early on, what's your org chart gonna look like? What kind of entities, LLCs, are you gonna need to structure? From a asset protection standpoint, from a liability standpoint, you should always have a holding LLC in Wyoming, Delaware, or Nevada. It just adds multiple layers of protection and that sort of thing. But I say all this and that you guys should always get with your SEC attorney early and often. They're going to be keeping you out of trouble so you can continue to do more deals, which is the important parts. Anyways, I think this concludes this episode of the Saturday Edition. For the folks out there that are interested in taking their game to the next level, they're interested in the accountability group, the support group, partnership opportunities. We have a really, really awesome thing going with our boutique hotel mastermind. We got about 24 members now, 13 hotels owned. We got two more under contract. We are hosting our first annual in-person retreat exclusive to the mastermind members down in Cabo San Lucas next month in March. So super excited for that. But that said, just a bunch of like-minded individuals. It's been a really, really awesome group. And, you know, I'm inspired by our group, but it's been great. If you are interested and you're serious about buying a boutique hotel in 2024 and taking advantage of the 40 million retiring baby boomers in the boutique hotel space this year, you can go to summerscapital.com/mastermind to book a free call with our team. Again, that's summerscapital.com/mastermind to book a free call to see if it'd be a good fit for you. Anyways, this concludes this edition of the Saturday Edition episode. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you in the next one. Peace.